the fact that people are still perhaps hesitant to go to court over environmental matters is still a barrier that needs to be addressed, and access to justice will be a key issue going forward. Why is this so important? Because when these legal obligations are not met, we have clearly seen at the international sphere that human rights can be affected, peace and security can be affected. Just last year, the UN Security Council related peace and security to the illegal exploitation of natural resources in two countries. So there is a growing recognition that the violation of environmental law has quite serious implications. UNEP has looked into the issue of environment and human rights more closely, and our cooperation with the UN High Commission on Human Rights has clearly shown that there are linkages between human rights and environmental law, and that there is an indivisible role in achieving the access to basic needs, while demonstrating that environmental and human rights can affect this access and also each other in the process. Now, one of the challenges going forward, of course, especially in 2014 and 2015, will be the balancing of environmental rights with social rights and economic rights as we debate a post-2015 development agenda. But this also opens up great opportunities for strengthening environmental law and environmental rights and the role of the judiciary in ensuring that there is justice as we go about a new development agenda. And this is a challenge, but I would also like to highlight that this is a great opportunity for all of us as well. What are the flip sides of the coin? Well, we have clearly seen over the past decades that environmental justice and environmental rights are associated with conflict if they are not effectively enforced, if they are not effectively implemented, if we don't have a judiciary around the world that takes this issue seriously and plays this role of guarantor for environmental justice. Around 40% of internal conflicts over the past 60 years have had a link to the environment and the exploitation of environmental resources. So this is clearly something that we need to keep in mind at the international level, and that needs that cooperation that has been mentioned already today between the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary to address this effectively. There is still an implementation gap. If you contrast the large number of environmental laws with the state of the environment, which has been captured recently by the GO5 report, you can see that the environment is still degrading. So we need to make sure that what we put in words in terms of the laws gets actually implemented on the ground. And again, this highlights the role of the judiciary. This highlights the sort of debate we're having today in making sure that there is an open door policy for the public to help us make these, ensure that these rights become a reality. I wanted to highlight in terms of challenge the issue of environmental crime. The illegal trade in wildlife has gained notoriety in recent years. It is a growing problem that affects endangered species, but also illegal logging is captured. But environmental crime is a growing problem that ranges from this illegal trafficking in wildlife to the smuggling of hazardous materials. And it is a growing problem that in terms of financial numbers, rivals with the overall official number of development assistance. So if we're losing, in terms of national revenue, about 70 to 230 billion US dollars annually, and you compare that with official ODA of about 127 billion dollars, you can see what some of the effects are if we do not strengthen environmental rule of law. Going forward, we need to maintain this dialogue. We need to maintain the dialogue between the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. And since the facts are there, sustainable development will not be achieved if we don't have the rule of law in the field of the environment. And we need to ensure that we continue to provide resources to promoting and develop fair, clear, and implementable laws, that we ensure that there are legal and practical means to increase transparency, and that we strengthen access to justice and information as well as public participation in the environmental rule of law. And we need all of us here in the room to make this happen. We need this continuous dialogue between the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Arnold.
Now, I give a floor to Claudia. Claudia, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Siendo esta primera vez que hago uso de la palabra, voy a hablar en español, mas yo quiero agradecer al senador Vidal Rego y al senador Aníbal Diniz, da comisao de constitucionalidad del Senado brasileiro, pela hospitalidad y acogimiento en esta audiencia. Es un gran placer para mí estar aquí con todos ustedes y tan distinguidos colegas de todas partes del mundo en representación de la Organización de los Estados Americanos. Realmente ya se ha dicho bastante en esta mañana y creo que no es necesario abundar sobre muchos de los puntos que se han hecho. Sin embargo, yo quisiera darles un poquito de lo que es la perspectiva de las Américas sobre este tema. La Organización de Estados Americanos, creada en 1948, en su carta establece que uno de sus propósitos esenciales es la prevención de situaciones que pudieran ser causas de conflictos, tensiones que pudieran dar lugar entre los estados o a nivel interno en estos países, es decir, la búsqueda de la paz y de la democracia. Por esta razón, es que pensamos que el trabajo con el Poder Judicial es fundamental. Ya hemos escuchado en varias ocasiones el papel conciliador, el papel armonizador que tiene el juez. Y en las Américas esto es mucho más relevante. Estamos en un continente donde tenemos más de 70 cuencas compartidas, bosques y otros ecosistemas que son vitales para la calidad de vida de cada ciudadano y para todo el planeta. Otro tema importante que se ha mencionado es el de la democracia. La Carta Democrática dice que la preservación del medio ambiente contribuye a la democracia y que a su vez la buena gobernanza y la aplicación efectiva de los tratados son la única manera de lograr el desarrollo sostenible. Los enfoques que se están utilizando para trabajar en el fortalecimiento de la legislación ambiental, incluyendo el gran desafío que es su aplicación efectiva, incluyen ese diálogo de que tanto hemos escuchado esta mañana entre los tres poderes del Estado, el legislativo, el ejecutivo, donde empezamos a dar nuestros primeros pasos en el desarrollo del derecho ambiental en esta región, y el Poder Judicial, tema que nos reúne hoy. Como bien se ha dicho, las directrices a nivel de visión y de política internacional están sumamente claras, y más aún en las Américas, donde tenemos 24 constituciones que establecen el derecho a un medio ambiente sano. Sin embargo, la brecha de conocimiento de cómo traducir qué significa ese derecho a cada ciudadano está ahí. La brecha en el acceso a la justicia sigue estando ahí. ¿Cómo podemos respetar la ley si no la conocemos y si no conocemos los principios y los instrumentos que tenemos para hacerla valer? Yo creo que en materia ambiental tenemos una ventaja muy importante, y es que el derecho internacional se desarrolla desde afuera hacia adentro. Tiene una influencia en lo que es hoy la política, en lo que es hoy la jurisprudencia de cada uno de los países, y eso contribuye a que haya una mayor armonización y que podamos ir avanzando también juntos en esa construcción de estándares de alguna manera u otra comunes, que aborden problemas comunes y que concilien dificultades. Otro tema fundamental es la necesidad de tener un poder judicial independiente que trabaje hacia la consecución de los objetivos de la justicia social y de la igualdad. Nosotros en la OEA acabamos de adoptar una visión, una declaración de visión estratégica que dice que la organización no puede estar muy lejos de la gente, tiene que estar más cerca de la gente. El juez está cerca de la gente. El juez tiene las puertas abiertas para hacer justicia. Entonces, este trabajo nos parece que es fundamental para el logro de la agenda y la política internacional de desarrollo sostenible. Ya se han hablado de varios de los desafíos que hay en el fortalecimiento de la capacidad y en la labor y el desafío que enfrentan nuestros jueces a diario. Pero en ánimo de lo que hemos estado conversando, una gran parte de nuestro trabajo se está enfocando en el fortalecimiento de las capacidades, en lograr que nuestros jueces puedan tener las herramientas necesarias para hacer justicia. Tenemos más de 200 acuerdos multilaterales ambientales que son vinculantes en todos nuestros países. Un acervo de conocimiento inmenso. Pero hay principios fundamentales, como los principios de Río que fueron mencionados hoy, entre otras herramientas que pueden ayudar a facilitar esa tarea del juez y a lograr un mejor conocimiento o dominio de las interacciones que existen entre el derecho ambiental y la problemática socioeconómica que se da a diario en nuestros países. Entonces, creo, al igual que mencionaba Lorenzetti, que la conflictividad está a la orden del día en nuestro hemisferio y que sin el trabajo conjunto entre el judicial, el legislativo y el ejecutivo no podremos prevenir, mitigar ni solucionar esos conflictos para el bienestar de nuestra gente. Ustedes tienen una información muy básica sobre el programa que estamos trabajando con nuestros socios, el PNUMA y la Comisión de Derecho Ambiental de la UICN, y algunos mensajes de lo que ha sido el sentir más reciente en el marco de nuestra Asamblea General de jueces, legisladores como ustedes que nos acompañan en este día y representantes del Poder Ejecutivo. Como bien se ha dicho, sin sostenibilidad no hay desarrollo, la equidad tiene que estar al centro, pero sobre todo el ser humano. La justicia tiene que enfocarse en la persona y para esto el conocimiento de esos principios básicos es fundamental. Y con eso termino. Muy obrigado, muchas gracias. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, Claudia. Je vais maintenant passer la parole à Madame Edith Weiss, qui se trouve être professeur à l'Université de Georgetown aux États-Unis, à Washington. Merci. Madame.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, I want to turn our attention to the group that's not represented here, future generations. Sustainable development has within it a critical element, which is to look toward the future and the impact of what we do today with climate change, with biodiversity, with toxic contaminations of waters and lakes, the impact that it has on them as future generations. There's a principle of intergenerational equity, which was most recently confirmed in detail by the United Nations Secretary General's report in September 2013, in which we do all have a right to use and benefit from the environment to address severe questions of equity today, but an obligation to pass it on in no worse condition than received, with three subcomponents, namely one of options and diversity, one of quality of the resources, and one of access to the resources. Judges and the judiciary have a critical role to play in helping to ensure that's implementation. And I want to pay a special credit today to Antonio Benjamin, who has played an important role in Brazil in the courts in recognizing this obligation to future generations, and to Antonio Cansado Trindade, the judge on the International Court of Justice, who in the 1980s was involved with the United Nations University Advisory Panel when we were developing and trying to articulate such a principle of intergenerational equity, and then he played it out when he was president of the Inter-American Court. What I want to do today is to look specifically at how we might implement in the courts intergenerational equity, and then to cite cases from around the world. We can't cite all the countries, but what we can do is to pick out courts in a specific country on all continents of the world. And I want to divide it into procedural issues, into substantive issues, and then a word about damages. On the procedural issue, the question is, how do you give standing to future generations? And that's the famous Philippines Court, in which the Supreme Court of the Republic of the Philippines granted standing to a group of children as representatives of themselves, but also of future generations, to challenge the granting of leases to a very biologically diverse area. The Supreme Court found the right to a balanced and healthy ecology in the Constitution and used that as a basis then with the principle of intergenerational equity to find standing for children. This has also been discussed at the International Court of Justice in the 1995 nuclear weapons case, where at least two of the judges wrote an opinion recognizing that New Zealand represented not only the people living today, but also the unborn people of tomorrow. And it's been carried forward in a couple of other cases there. Another procedural issue, which is the statute of limitations, which often applies to the bringing of claims to environmental environmental cases, which can have long-term implications for future generations, and the possibility of tolling the statute of limitations for cases that would that involve long-term damage to future generations. So let's then turn to the substantive issues. And here we have some constitutional provisions and some statutory provisions that are very helpful. I want to turn to South Asia, to the continent of India here, which is explicitly, the Supreme Court has a number of cases there that have dealt with this issue. Intergenerational equity has been said to be part of sustainable development. And in the interpretation, for example, of national forest policy and state forest policy in the state of Himachal Pradesh, there was a very poignant quote there that said, after all, the present generation has no right to deplete all the existing forests and leave nothing for the next and future generations. It's also been applied there in the interpretation of what would be required of environmental impact statements, including an assessment of the effects for intergenerational equity. And it's been applied to historical water tanks and other things within that country. Turning now to Africa, and to the country of Kenya, a 2006 decision by the High Court there that is specifically spoke of intergenerational equity as affecting the outcome in a water pollution case that involved wastewater and sewerage into a river, the building of wastewater plants, and compliance by those who dumped into the river. Turning to Australia and New Zealand, we find there that there are various statutes at the federal state level in Australia that recognize the principle of intergenerational equity as part of a principle of ecological sustainability. And the courts in New South Wales, for example, have several cases that have applied that, as do the courts of New Zealand with its own environmental court, have applied intergenerational equity to reach a result in commercial and recreational fishing cases, among a couple of others. And finally, turning briefly to Europe, Hungary has an ombudsman for future generations, which was established by the parliament in Hungary. And one of the cases that they are trying to bring is to stop the conversion of an organic agricultural field to one that would involve a lot of the toxic use of pesticides and the contamination, potentially permanent contamination of the fields there. So my bottom line is that if one looks at the substantive component, one can see that the interpretation of ecologically sustainable development or other constitutional provisions have been used to address interests of future generations. They've been used in the context of environmental impact statements, and they've been used in the context of essentially ensuring justice for present and for future generations. Finally, a word about damages, because we want to prevent the damage from happening, especially if we're talking about future generations. But there are some implications for how we calculate damages should they occur. For example, contamination of lakes can mean 100 years at a minimum before the toxics can be flushed out of the lakes. And simply looking at how much people value using the lakes today does not get at the question of what do you need in order to ensure its conservation for the future. So again, we have some developments that might be made in the calculation of damages on this issue. My concluding comment simply relates to the need for judges to become critical in ensuring that the future generations that aren't here are represented today, so that we can respect not only ensuring justice today for the environment, but justice tomorrow for the environment. And I think when we look worldwide at the cases that have already come and are coming before national and subnational courts, we can get from them a number of very useful tools for carrying this forward. Thank you very much for the honor of being with you today.